Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. In this hour, we're talking about a worldwide commitment to turning the tide on climate change, and California's own groundbreaking efforts to reduce greenhouse emissions economy-wide and achieve a zero-emission electricity grid by 2045. So what will it take to realize the climate change goals of the 2015 Paris Agreement? Well, nothing short of a global effort, which is why leaders from around the world, including from government, business, nonprofits, and universities, are gathering at the Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco this week. Co-chaired by Jerry Brown, Governor of California, the summit will host hundreds of events highlighting achievements from around the world with the goal of inspiring the ongoing pursuit of a sustainably powered economy. So tonight, in the first of our three-part series on course-correcting climate change, we're going to be looking at the summit's primary objective to maintain the global momentum for reducing greenhouse gases and stemming the tide of life-threatening climate change. Joining me here in the studio is California State Senator Kevin De Leon, representing District 24 in Los Angeles. Senator De Leon is a former president pro tem of the California Senate and author of groundbreaking climate change legislation, including a bill that Governor Brown just signed this morning that sets a state target of 100% carbon-free electricity by 2045. And we should also mention he's a candidate for the United States Senate on the ballot this November. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation.
And we're joined by California Secretary for Environmental Protection, Matthew Rodriguez. Secretary Rodriguez joined the governor's cabinet in 2011 after 24 years with the California Department of Justice, and he helped build the Under 2 Coalition, a global effort to galvanize cities and states around the world on climate action. Welcome, Matt.
Oh, thank you.
And we're joined by Louise Bedsworth, Executive Director of the California Strategic Growth Council and former Deputy Director of the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. Louise has worked on California's climate change policy now for 15 years. Welcome, Louise.
Thank you.
And in about 20 minutes, we'll invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation by dialing our toll-free line, 1-866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. You can post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So, Senator De Leon, I have to start with you. It took 2 years, but Governor Brown just this morning signed SB 100, a bill that you sponsor that would, as I mentioned, commit California to using only carbon-free electricity by 2045. So first, congratulations on that achievement. But what can you tell our listeners about this bill and why it's significant?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you very much, Ethan. I think that during these very difficult times, during these very dangerous times, when Washington seems to be logic-free, science-free, as well as conscience-free, California is demonstrating to the rest of the nation, as well the world, that we will continue to lead on the issue of climate change, regardless of who occupies the White House today. It took me a couple years to get 100% clean energy across the finish line, and I'm grateful to the governor and to my friends and colleagues in both the Senate as well as the Assembly. But it's a very clear message to the rest of the nation, as well as the world, that we will put into law a mandated goal of 100% clean energy by the year 2045. In fact, I predict, actually, this is just my own opinion, that we will get there probably in 2035 if the ingenuity, the creativity, the innovation of the private sector does its job here in California well. It moves California. It speeds up our transition to 50% clean energy by the year 2026, renewable energy. By the year 2030, it is mandated to get – we have to get there at 60%. And obviously by the year 2045, we have to be 100% clean energy. And that's a mix of not just renewable energy, wind, solar, possibly geothermal and other renewable sources, but also other different types of technologies. Hydro, current hydro, not new hydro, but different types of technologies that it's my hope that will be created in the immediate future to help us reach our 100% clean energy. Listen, the goal is fourfold. Number one is to reduce our harmful greenhouse gas emissions, carbon dioxide, which is atmospheric. Two, to reduce criteria pollutants that our children breathe into their lungs every single day. That's that ugly smog, that haze. Three is to provide a tax cut to all the ratepayers in California by paying less out of the pocket for utilities. And lastly, to grow this economy and to put Californians to work in the clean energy space.
And so it's an ambitious goal to get to greenhouse gas free by 2045. And as you said, you know, you hope, you expect that will happen sooner. But what do you see as some of the key challenges to making sure that this is actually feasible to do in a cost-effective manner?
Well, a couple things. One is that the IOUs, investor-owned utilities, have already signaled publicly that they will probably hit approximately 50% RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard, by the year 2020. That is a year and a half from now. If they're accurate, they'll be 10 years ahead of schedule. Getting to 50, 60, 70, 80% clean energy, I don't think is going to be complex. I don't think it's going to be difficult. Where the challenge will lie, without question, is the last 15 to 20%. And that's where we're going to rely on the innovators and hopefully catalyze the capital that will be needed to create the technologies that will be vital to help us meet our ambitious target goals. And I think that there's no better place in the world than California, where we're creators, we're innovators, and where we create and invent the future.
And what do you say to people who are concerned about what this is going to do to their electricity bills, that this is going to drive up costs for doing business, for living and using electricity in homes? What do you say to those concerns?
Well, I'll say this, is that the predictors of doomsday scenarios, the critics have always been on the sidelines and not on the front lines on the issue of clean energy and the issue of climate change. Back in 2002, we went from 0 to 20%. Clean energy, a step forward, a huge step forward to decarbonizing our grid. They all predict that the economy would implode and that utility bills would explode as well, too. Then we went from 20% to 33% through an executive order through Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it was put into statutory law by then-Senator Joe Simidian to 33%. Then I took it from 33% to 50%. What is happening is that when you send a very clear market signal, that attracts the necessary capital to create the technologies that are critical to meet our ambitious target goals. But when you have very clear standards with benchmarks for procurement of clean energy, renewable energy, it sets the benchmark, which I think is ambitious but also within reach. We don't want to raise utility rates on everyday California consumers, ratepayers, working families. That's the last thing we want to do. And that's why right now renewable energy, wind and solar, are actually per kilowatt is less expensive, clearly less expensive than dirty thermal coal as well as natural gas. So once we make that transition and decarbonize our grid, the idea is to pay less money out of your pocket, not more.
And you said it took 2 years. What was some of the opposition? What was? I imagine the politics were tricky on this, but as you said, we have a good track record. So what was some of the hitching points?
Well, sort of maybe a precursor to Senate Bill 100, Senate Bill 350. Governor Brown and I worked together in Senate Bill 350, 50% RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard. The fossil fuel industry primarily spent more than $25 million to try to defeat Senate Bill 350. $25 million, probably a record in most money spent to defeat a legislative bill in California. So the special interests, whether it be fossil fuels, agricultural industry, which have always opposed, they're big users of energy, they've always opposed every clean energy, climate change policy that we have moved forward in Sacramento. And also, too, and unfortunately, the investor-owned utilities, such as Pacific Gas and Electric, but they have their challenges before them. Obviously, what happened in San Bruno, with the gas explosion, as well as the Napa Valley fires and Sonoma fires, and the issue of liability and inverse condemnation, and a whole slew of other challenges they have before them. Unfortunately, it saddened me that they came out publicly in opposition to the measure. It's my hope that they get in line, fall into place, and understand that whether they like it or not, we're moving towards a clean energy future for California.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're certainly pleased that you can be here to describe the legislation now that it was just signed this morning, but we actually have a pretty action-packed week here in the Bay Area in terms of climate change, and we have the Global Climate Action Summit coming up this week. It's involving hundreds of events, spotlighting a lot of the issues and solutions surrounding the 2015 Paris Agreement. And Secretary Rodriguez, you are a high-level representative of the Brown administration, and I know that Governor Brown is co-chairing this, and this was very much a summit that he wanted to hold, particularly before he leaves office. Can you describe for listeners some of the key topics that were going to be discussed and what the sort of larger, you know, hope is for what can be achieved in this in the summit this week?
Well, thank you. Let me start first with the larger goal, because that's the important part of the summit. At the end of this year, the UN will have a conference in Katowice, Poland, to do a stock take, to take a look at how countries are doing in meeting their targets that they agreed to in Paris in 2015. Now, we already know that the targets that were agreed to in 2015 are not sufficient to stop climate change. So what we need to do is encourage greater ambition in Poland at the end of this year. So the goal of the summit is to provide some substance for momentum and encouragement for greater ambition when we get to Poland at the end of the year. So what we're talking about is what's been done in the last 3 years to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to deal with climate change. California is a natural leader because, to be quite honest, I don't think any other government is doing as much as California is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. As the senator mentioned, we've been pioneering renewable energy. We've been successful in reaching our 2020 target already. We were trying to get down to carbon emission levels of from 1990. We've already done that. Our target had been to get to that level by 2020. We're already there. So we've got a good story in California about how we're actually reducing greenhouse gas emissions while at the same time, as the senator mentioned, growing our economy. In the last 8 years, we've gone from the 10th largest economy in the world to the 5th largest economy in the world. We've added 3 million jobs. Over 500,000 of those jobs are in the clean tech sector. So it's a good story, and it's important to get that story out and similar stories from around the world. As you mentioned, we've been working with the Under 2 Coalition. The point of the Under 2 Coalition is to gather together subnational governments, regional governments. We've had support from cities. We've had support from national governments who have programs similar to California's, who share our objectives, and to share their stories as well. And then to work with businesses, too, who have committed to the targets of the Paris Agreement, so that we can encourage greater ambition at the national level when everybody gets to Poland at the end of this year.
And can you describe some of the attendees? You've kind of hinted at some of the different sectors that will be represented. But what kinds of people are going to be in town for this summit this week?
Oh, well, the co-chairs are from around the world. So we've got, in addition to Governor Brown, Patricia Espinosa, who is the UN climate secretary, who will be taking the call to action from the summit to the UN conference in Poland in the end of the year. Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, who's obviously been instrumental in the climate change movement. We've got Anand Mahindra, who is a well-known industrialist from India, who is also committed to meeting the Paris targets. And we've got Xie Shanghua, who is a minister from China, who is also here to be a co-chair and support this program. So broad international support, as well as a number of representatives from regions around the world. The president of Hungary will be there. We'll have representatives from one of our partners in starting the Under 2 Coalition from Baden-Württemberg. Just representatives from around the world, as well as businesses, as well as city representatives, to show that there's progress being made at a whole number of levels.
Yeah, there's obviously so many facets to climate change in terms of renewable energy, in terms of managing the impacts from a warming climate. Do you get the sense, though, for this particular summit that there might be some specific topics that people are going to want to talk about, or particularly from around the world, or do you think it's just going to be a sort of a panoply of all the issues related to climate change?
Well, certainly in the affiliated events around the summit, there are some 350 affiliated events that will be talking about a wide range of subjects related to climate change. But the summit itself is concentrating on five specific areas where we want to encourage greater ambition. There's healthy energy systems, and that's basically talking about the global shift to clean and equitable energy. We also want to look at inclusive economic growth, and that means including businesses in this effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, as well as making sure that the economic benefits of these programs reach everybody in the world. And certainly that's been a focus of what we've been trying to do here in California, make sure that all segments of our society are benefiting from these programs. We also are going to be working on sustainable communities, sustainable community planning. Let's make sure that the systems we're setting up today, our supply chains, our business investments, are sustainable and will provide guidance in the future. We also want to look at land and ocean stewardship. How we use our land, how we use our ocean is obviously an important component to the climate change puzzle. We need to have our forests working effectively and sequestering carbon rather than releasing it through forest fires. We also need to look at ocean health and the ocean's ability to absorb carbon. And then the last area is we want to look at transformative climate investments. How can we work with investors, bankers, businesses to invest in these new technologies that are necessary to overcome that 20% gap in renewable energy that the senator has been talking about.
So it sounds like some focus tracks then for the summit for the participants to learn about. And Louise Besworth, I want to work you into this discussion as well. The Office of Planning and Research recently released California's fourth climate change assessment, and it's an extremely comprehensive report. It's really 9 reports, one on each region of the state, from the Bay Area down to the Central Coast to the inland deserts. So can you tell us what are some of your key takeaways from this report? I think it's helpful, you know, as we talk about climate change, it's easy to get abstract, but for listeners to really understand what we're facing in terms of the science and what is likely to happen to us in terms of those impacts.
Sure. Excuse me. Yeah. So the fourth climate change assessment is actually a compilation of over 50 technical reports that we then summarized to understand what is climate change going to look like in different regions around the state. And I think overall, first of all, I think you could talk to people today who probably don't need 50 technical reports to tell them that climate change is happening. So if we talk to people in Napa and Sonoma and Redding and, you know, places where we've been experiencing these extreme events, you know, communities that have been living with the drought, I think a lot of people understand climate change is happening now. What the climate change assessment has done is really builds on what we have observed and what we're experiencing to think about what's that going to look like in the future. And we can see what the benefits will be to California of meeting global greenhouse gas emission reduction targets. So it's unavoidable. We're already experiencing climate change, and we're going to see worsening climate change over the coming decades. But the how much worse that gets is critically dependent on how we do in reducing global greenhouse gas emissions.
And so were there any findings that really stood out to you? New impacts that, you know, scientists were telling you are now kind of in line that maybe we hadn't thought about or hadn't realized they would be getting that severe?
A lot of the trends that we've seen have actually been confirmed. This is our fourth assessment, and we've understood, we're getting more fine-scaled results, so we can look at a finer resolution and talk about what's going to happen in a given region or community. So that's important. I think another really important finding that came out in a study in this report is looking at specifically what does it look like if we look at global accumulation of greenhouse gas emissions under the Paris commitments, and if we met the 1.5 or 2 degrees goals, we can now understand what that would mean for California. So what does temperature change look like in California, and what kind of direct benefit can we see here? There's another really important study that looked at the health benefits of achieving deep greenhouse gas emission reductions. So when we talk about the costs of doing this, you have to look at that alongside the costs of those impacts. And if you look at avoided health impacts or hospitalizations, mortality, and morbidity, those savings dwarf the costs of doing some of this work. So I think that's really important as well. And so the assessment really gives that broader, I think, more comprehensive picture of what climate change is going to look like for California, what it's looking like now, and then how that compares to the solutions that we're seeking.
And since it does get pretty specific, I mean, what do you tell people like from here in the San Francisco Bay Area, for example? What can they expect? I mean, what if they come back in a time machine in 50 years from now, you know, what's it going to look like here?
I mean, I think one of the most pressing issues in the Bay Area is certainly sea level rise and what that could look like. And so if we look under a high emission scenario, you could see over 50 inches of sea level rise in California. And that obviously has critical impacts for the Bay Area, but the whole California coast. Coast. And the Bay Area has been doing a lot of work to think about how do we design resilience and how do we build resilient solutions in this region. And so that's a very important finding here. Wildfire is another one, of course. And then extreme heat. This is not an area that is adapted to extreme heat, so one where you could see a lot of specific, more detrimental health impacts.
Mm-hmm. So a lot to think about when we try to grapple with this problem. So this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking about what California and the world is doing about climate change. Do you think our current clean energy legislation goes far enough? Have you made changes in your lifestyle to reduce your own carbon footprint? How will the passage of all this climate change legislation impact you? Please bring us your questions or comments. We want to hear from you, and the phone lines are open now. The number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So we have an email question coming in from David in San Francisco, who asks, can the federal government overrule the state's initiatives on climate? So Senator DeLeon, let me direct that one to you. What's your response when people ask how much we can do before the Trump administration starts to rein us in?
Well, the answer is, and I know Matthew, we have a very fine secretary who serves the state of California incredibly well. I've had the opportunity to spend time with Matthew, not just in Lima, Peru, but in Paris, as well as in Morocco, in Marrakesh, at the Conference of Parties. So I know that he may, as well as Louise, may intervene in this answer. But the Trump administration obviously has attempted on numerous occasions to usurp and undermine California's climate change leadership. Just most recently, their attempt to unwind the California Clean Air Initiative, or more specifically, the mileage, the fuel efficiency standards that we have in California. We don't believe that they legally can overturn our statutory laws. That being said, it is most likely will be something that's litigated in a court of law. We believe that we stand on firm legal ground with regards to the ability to govern our environment, our environmental laws, as well as our climate policies. They have continuously threatened us from Washington, D.C., but that's what sets California apart from so many other states, so many other subnationals, is that it is because of the political leadership in California, and it's because we have a singular voice, mostly, that has said that with or without Washington, California is moving forward with our California climate leadership that so many people, not just around the country, but from all over the world, look towards.
And Secretary Rodriguez, you are a representative of not only of Cal EPA, but I know you serve in the California Department of Justice, as I mentioned in the intro. What's your take on this? A lot of this is going to boil down to litigation. So, you know, what is the response? That how much can we get away with, basically, before the feds start to put the brakes on what we're doing?
There are several ways to look at it. First off, as I like to note, California started its programs to deal with climate change when the Bush administration was in position. And so we've dealt with administrations that didn't agree with us in the past, and that was not an obstacle to us designing our own programs. That's first. Second, we've got such a wide range of programs, the Renewable Portfolio Standard, the Cap and Trade Program, our Energy Efficiency Standards, Sustainable Communities Planning, our Vehicle Emissions Programs. A lot of those are just purely matters of state law, and the federal government can't touch a number of those programs. As the senator mentioned, there may be some questions about preemption or Commerce Clause issues that may arise, but we feel like we've got a good legal defense to those claims. And so I think California is well-placed to continue its programs and continue doing what we've been doing, frankly, for the last 40 years. So we have aggressive environmental programs. We've had them for a long time, and we'll continue to have them.
We have a long track record of experience kind of being at the leading edge of a lot of these issues. So let's go to the phone lines. We have Matthew from Berkeley. Matthew, welcome to City Visions.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. And I just want to take one quick second before my question to congratulate Senator De Leon on SB 100. That is quite a momentous feat, and I want to thank you for your leadership on that. So thank you for getting that done.
Thank you very much, Matthew.
My question relates, and this is a sticky one, so I'm going to get right to it. California is doing great on emissions except for transportation, which continue to go up. And I think that folks who track this issue closely like I do have seen as the state has really struggled with how to contain sprawl, how to help people get out of their cars and reduce pollution and help them live closer to where they work, which is one of the key aspects of real action on climate change. I'd love to hear the speakers talk about how the state is going to address the challenge it has with cities that are really struggling to build enough housing. The housing crisis connects directly to climate change. And what you see going forward, I think my view is we definitely need to electrify cars, but that's going to not happen as fast as we need it to. We need to get people out of their cars, onto transit, onto bicycles, even onto scooters, which cities are now cracking down on scooters during a climate crisis. Should we be cracking down on scooters during a climate crisis? Can you guys address that? Thanks very much.
All right. Well, Matthew, thank you for the question. Louise Besworth, let me direct that one to you because I know the Strategic Growth Council is involved in a lot of these issues around urban mobility. So what's your response to Matthew?
I mean, I think this is a great question, and it is a challenge. It is a major area of investment for us, with a lot of the proceeds coming out of the cap and trade auction are being invested in affordable housing and sustainable communities programs and other initiatives to help get projects built on the ground that bring people and jobs and transit and active transportation options all together. And I think what we really need to think about is how we do that in a systematic and connected way, and really look at communities as systems, and how we do that. And I think we are seeing that happening in some places. We're also making some investments in a more neighborhood scale, so larger scale investments that are at a neighborhood scale, trying to interconnect some of these programs. And I think it is, you know, it will continue to be a challenge. Another big effort we've had over the last several years is to help local governments with better planning guidelines and tools to help them think about when doing a general plan. How can you really think about vehicle miles traveled, so how much people are driving? How do we think about transportation impacts? And so I think these are all starting to shift the needle, but something we just need a really concerted effort to keep working on. And it's got to be a partnership between local government and the state.
They certainly have the land use authority. Well, Senator De Leon, from a state perspective, yeah, a lot of these issues are local, but sure, what's happening at the state level to address this really challenging
problem? Let me take a crack at that, because actually decarbonizing our grid is low-hanging fruit. I want to put this in context because it's very important to understand. Years back, retail sellers of energy, the investor-owned utilities as well as publicly owned utilities, were responsible for at least half of our carbon dioxide emissions. We have made tremendous strides going from 0 to 50%, now 100% goal by 2045. Carbon emissions from the utilities now account for roughly about 19-20% overall in the aggregate. So we have made visible gains in California. Our air is cleaner as a result. It is not as clean as we want it to be. We still have work to do, but we are getting there. So decarbonizing our grid is low-hanging fruit. So therefore, we're going to be successful getting there. Now, that leaves tailpipe emitters, the 29 million cars that are on our highways and our city roads, as well as goods movement, transportation. They account roughly for about 40% of the carbon dioxide emissions. So the next governor and the next legislative bodies are going to have to deal with some very difficult issues, policy-wise and political, how we're going to start reducing our carbon dioxide emissions from tailpipe emitters. Now, electrifying our transportation system is going to be very critical, because one of the challenges with owning and getting access to the cleanest and latest technology, at least with electric vehicles, ZEBs, is that the price points are out of reach for many Californians, and two, we simply don't have the infrastructure. Vast majority of Californians drive internal combustion cars because it's easy, because the exclusive transportation fuel supply is fossil fuels. It is gas. It is oil. And there are gas stations that are ubiquitous all over the state of California. To get to point A, point B, place of worship, your work, drop off your kids at school, go to a doctor's appointment, go see a movie, go shopping, whatever it is that you need to do, you have gas stations that are ubiquitous. We don't have charging stations unless you live in Pacific Heights or in Palo Alto or elsewhere. So what is an exciting component, this goes back to Senate Bill 350, working with Governor Jerry Brown and the administration, is that now the utilities or and others are going to create a transportation electrification system where we'll have charging stations that will be ubiquitous, just like gas stations. So that will help also move folks towards purchasing electric vehicles, as well as making sure that we democratize our climate change benefits and making sure not those who just have the highest educational attainment, not just those who have the financial wherewithal, can get access to the latest and greatest clean energy technologies, whether it's an energy-efficient home, energy storage, distributed generation, rooftop solar, or a brand-new, beautiful Tesla in their garage. Because if only the wealthy get access to this technology, then we're never going to meet our macro target goals. And that's why we have to democratize our benefits with intentionality, a sense of purpose, because the marketplace left to itself will not democratize these benefits and make sure that working families, low-income families, those who are most vulnerable to carbon dioxide emissions and other criteria pollutants are able to be resilient and able to actually participate in carbon reduction policies themselves.
Well, certainly undermines political support if you don't have broad-based benefits
exactly.
For these programs as well. So this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And we're on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking about what California and the world is doing about climate change, particularly with the Global Climate Action Summit happening in San Francisco this week. We're joined by California State Senator Kevin De Leon, representing District 24 in Los Angeles, former President Pro Tem of the California Senate and author of a bill that Governor Brown just signed this morning setting a state target of 100% carbon-free electricity by 2045. We're also joined by California Secretary for Environmental Protection Matthew Rodriguez, who joined the governor's cabinet in 2011 after 24 years with the Department of Justice, and also by Louise Bedsworth, Executive Director of the California Strategic Growth Council and former Deputy Director of the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. We also welcome your phone calls and questions. The number to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And you can also email us any questions you have at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or you can follow us on Twitter at CityVisionsKALW. Well, we're joined by a guest by phone, Elliot Whittington. And Elliot is the director of policy at the University of Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership and the director of the Prince of Wales Corporate Leaders Group. He'll be participating at the summit this week and can give us a bit of a European perspective on what California is doing and kind of where Europe is at in terms of the fight on climate change. So I want to welcome Elliot by phone and appreciate
Thank
you calling
much.
In for this. And wanted to ask you, Elliot, what can you tell us about the pulse in Europe when it comes to moving towards a carbon-free future?
Thanks, and thanks for having me. Yes, I would love to. And it's great to be on a show where you've got the state senator and the leadership that he's been able to show. I mean, I think one thing's for certain, which is that the energy and focus that a number of U.S. states, including and particularly California, have been able to show on this issue has been truly impressive. If we compare that to Europe, I think, you know, these issues, climate policy, renewables, air quality, these have been around. They're kind of much more part of the landscape, and there's less of a pushback about whether or not we should act. And in fact, in Europe, there is very much it's locked into policy that we have for the power and industrial sectors, an 80% reduction by 2050 for in terms of the emissions of those sectors. So what's happening at the moment is that there is a big back and forth with a number of leadership voices coming forward and saying that's not enough, that's not a good response to what the latest state of climate science is, to what the Paris Agreement says. It's not actually living up to or living up to the pace of change that is already happening in terms of the rollout of renewables and that kind of thing in Europe. So there are a number of voices that are supporting what's called net zero, so i.e. 100% emissions reductions, where as long as you're able to offset the residuals by you know, growing extra forest, that kind of thing. So there's a real push to step up in Europe.
Well, we just talked about how in California I've made progress on what Senator De Leon just called low-hanging fruit on the electricity side, but we have a lot to do on the transportation side in terms of emissions from that sector. What do you see as the big challenge, you know, in Europe, if we can sort of speak, you know, subcontinent-wide, in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions over there?
So I think that the power sector is the transformation that's underway, and there's strong ambitious targets that could go a bit further. The transport sector, again, there's energy. There's electric vehicles, good transport systems that are efficient and that are optimized. It needs to accelerate. It needs to make a really big step up, but it's underway. The harder things are the industrial sectors, where I don't think people are quite so clear on where the changes are. And you've got a lot of debate and discussion about, you know, is it hydrogen? Is it other things that can really make a difference in those sectors? And also housing, where there is a huge opportunity. I mean, I speak to a number of businesses that sort of talk about the fact that they have great solutions to offer. They can really make people's housing more efficient, more pleasant to live in. But the market isn't quite there. It's too fragmented. It's too split. And there needs to be a really big push from the policy side to really kickstart the change that's happening there. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of areas that really need progress.
Oh, well, I appreciate that view from your perch over there and in Europe. And I hope you enjoy the summit. And if you could stand by, we may get some questions for you. But glad that you'll be in town for the summit. And I want to go to the phone lines.
Thanks
we
very
have
much.
We have Greg from East Palo Alto. So Greg, welcome to City Visions. What's your question for our panelists?
Greg, can you hear me?
Hi, Greg. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you.
Great, thank you. My question is really about a prior caller who asked about the transportation effort to electrify the cars, and maybe this was partly answered by the previous call, but there's a certain number of gigawatts or whatever that has to be added to the grid to supply those cars. How many gigawatts is that? How much of an increase in power supply has to be done, and how are you planning for that?
All right, let's see. Maybe I'll direct that one to Secretary Rodriguez. If you want to answer the question about electricity supply, how are we going to supply all these electric vehicles, all those Teslas and lower-cost electric vehicles coming online?
If you build it, they will come. We understand the issue of providing more energy. There's no doubt that it will require more energy. And let me talk about the scope of the transportation problem. 50% of our emissions right now are related to transportation, almost 40% directly from the tailpipe of the cars. The other 10% is from the refineries or what it takes to produce that fuel. So our standing right now is we're at about, according to 2016 information, our emissions in the state are about 429 million metric tons. Our goal for 2030 to get to 40% below 1990 levels is 260 million metric tons. So we have an awful lot of reduction that we're going to have to do in the next 12 years. And obviously, a lot of that is going to be in the transportation sector. So that's going to be our focus. And as Louise mentioned, we're spending an awful lot of money investing in providing that infrastructure. And the senator mentioned that as well, that we need to provide those charging stations. Where's that electricity going to come from? Well, we're doing a lot of work with the utilities. They're very interested in putting in these charging stations. We're also looking at energy efficiency. I mean, that's a large part of the puzzle as well. California has long been a pioneer on energy efficiency. And so while we've seen tremendous growth in electronics in the last 40 years, per capita electricity use in California is more or less 3 or 4% above what it was in the 70s, and that's compared to like 18 or 19% in the rest of the country growth in per capita electricity use. So the answer, I'm getting to it, is that I think you're going to see continued change and growth in the technology that will provide energy through renewables. I think through energy efficiency, you will see that we're able to keep our energy demands low. We've got a very, very successful record of meeting our targets, and we're going to meet our target when it comes to the transportation sector as well.
And thanks to SB 100, we'll have a carbon-free electricity grid by 2045. Well, Greg, thank you for that question. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and we're on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're talking about what California and the world is doing about climate change, and we're joined by California State Senator Kevin De Leon, representing District 24 in Los Angeles, and also a candidate for the United States Senate on the ballot this November. We're also joined by California Secretary for Environmental Protection, Matthew Rodriguez, and we're joined by Louise Bedsworth, Executive Director of the Strategic Growth Council. We do want to hear from you with your questions and comments for our panelists tonight, and the number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or you can tweet us at cityvisionskalw. I want to go to Janan from Sebastopol. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but welcome to City Visions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's Janan.
Janan. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So what's your question for our group here?
My question is, well, there are so many ways to reduce heating, heating up the planet. One would be to reduce hardscape and, you know, put in more forests and places that attract water and cool. But also, I'm wondering about decentralizing power companies so that people who are able to, and buildings of all kinds, large buildings, small buildings, could have renewables on site that would provide all the energy that it takes to run that building and the lives within the building. Solar would be one option, but there might be more technologies. And then reducing the dependency upon centralized power companies. I think that if we have fewer electrical wires running around and sparking, it's safer, and I think that people can probably have energy generated in their location or in smaller enclaves that will sustain us.
Yeah, so it's a good kind of vision for where our electricity sector might go. Senator De Leon, do you want to respond to Janan's question around this sort of decentralized energy system?
Well, that's a very good question from Janan. Without picking winners or losers and disrupting the status quo, the establishment authority, obviously we have community choice aggregators right now, which are disrupting the status quo without question. But more specifically, with regards to microgrids direct access to, a little controversial with some folks, depending on if you're moving clean electrons across the grid to get directly to the business that is purchasing them. I can see that in the future without question. You have major companies in California, Apple, for example, and Google, that have made it very clear that they want to be at 100% clean energy. And they have made that determination both philosophically, environmentally, as well as economically. And I think that there will be a lot of other businesses that are very energy intensive that will do the math, and they'll figure out that it makes good business sense for them. So microgrids, though controversial right now with the current status quo, is potentially the future and how you decentralize the grid.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Janan. And we've got another caller. We have Richard from Oakland. Richard, welcome to City Visions. Richard, are you there? I think we just lost Richard, so we can move on to some other questions, because I certainly had a few for the panelists here. So actually, Secretary Rodriguez, question for you. There's been a number of protests related to the Brown administration's policies on oil and gas exploration, and I know there are some protesters at this summit basically saying that Governor Brown should be doing more to keep it in the ground, keep California's oil supply in the ground. What do you say to these protesters? Because I know they've been around for a number of years now, kind of, you know, on the administration's case about the extraction side of our climate portfolio?
Give us a chance. I mean, we've identified that we need to reduce petroleum use. And in fact, the target is to roughly reduce our petroleum use in the state by about 45% to 50% by 2030. And I was just talking about how we're going to need to do that in order to meet our targets and change the transportation sector. And then if you look at what we're doing, we've got the low carbon fuel standard, which is designed to reduce the carbon content of our fuels. And that really is encouraging renewable fuels, biodiesel, other substitutes for petroleum. You look at the cap and trade program, which is putting a price on the carbon emissions related to the transportation sector. A lot of the money that is going into the cap-and-trade program comes out of oil and gas development and fuel development as well. If you look at our sustainable community strategies, they're all designed to reduce the use of cars. And we are trying to move away, in answer to the question from the previous caller, to other forms of transportation, using electrified public transportation, encouraging more walking and bicycle use. So California has a whole range of programs that are designed to reduce our petroleum use. We also have a track record of meeting our targets, and our targets very clearly require us to reduce petroleum use. So give us a chance to get there. What we need to do is move forward in a very reasonable and rational fashion to make sure that there's no undue impact on our economy. That's a big part of it as well. If you make sudden starts or stops or policy changes, that can have impacts on your economy. We want to avoid that. But we know where we need to go. We need to reduce our petroleum use. And frankly, if we're going to get to our overall target in 2050 of carbon neutrality, we're going to have to move away from petroleum use for our transportation sector in the next 30 years. That's just a given. And so we're moving there. We're going to get there. We've got a record of getting there. We've got programs that are already cutting back on oil and gas use. And we've got other programs, actually, I should mention, that are looking at the environmental impacts of oil and gas use. So we've got a lot of programs that are moving us in the right direction and moving us away from petroleum. Just give us a chance to get there.
And Senator De Leon, same question for you. What do you say in response to this criticism that California has not, made ad policies to keep oil and gas in the ground that we have here?
Well, let me just back up a little bit what Matthew said. I think that you have to give him an opportunity. It's not that easy. One thing that folks have to understand, that we are the fifth largest economy in the world. The United States is the world's largest economy, world's largest GDP, largely because of fossil fuels. We now know clearly, because scientists have told us, that this is not sustainable, and we have to change our policies. And part of Senate Bill 350, which was enacted by our governor, Jerry Brown, in 2015, part of the provision was 50% energy efficiency, which would reduce our energy load, which is part of the law, 50% RPS. And the other 50% was what Matthew just articulated, reducing the consumption of fossil fuels by 50%. By the year 2030. When we figured that number out, it wasn't some pie-in-the-sky number that we sort of threw a dart blindly, to the wall. We had a scientific roadmap on how to do it without, and this is a major point that I want to underscore that Matthew just articulated, without major disruptions to the economy. We don't want to go on a fast track to clean energy, decarbonizing our grid, as well as reducing our dependency on fossil fuels in such a manner that is so disruptive to the economy that we end up causing high unemployment or underemployment. We want to do this in a very intelligent way. We want to do this in a very strategic way that will grow this economy and reduce our carbon footprint. And we are very sensitive to those communities in very vulnerable areas in California, where there is extraction. So they are right in terms of what they're feeling, the folks who have been getting sick, who have been dying of cancer. I am very, very sensitive to what is happening with them. They're right also to we need to just move in a manner that is intelligent, strategic, and it'll all fall into place sooner rather than later.
All right. So if there's no protesters at the summit, we're going to take credit for giving you a platform to respond to their concerns. So I want to go back to Richard, who we now have on the line from Oakland. So, Richard, are you there?
I am here, yes. Thank you.
All right. Well, welcome to City Visions.
Mike, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I do have a vision. The idea of working from home, it used to be very popular in the 90s, and now it's lost favor. Companies don't promote it so much. But imagine if there was no rush hour.
So this is actually, I've heard of this as a climate. So I'm sorry to cut you off. I want to make sure we have time for a couple other callers in the line. But actually what you're bringing up has been cited as a climate strategy to reduce traffic, having more people working remotely. And Louise Bedsworth, I know at the Strategic Growth Council, you're focused, as you mentioned, on reducing driving miles. Is this part of the mix of strategies to encourage more remote telecommuting?
I mean, absolutely. I think anything that can be done to get people out of a single-occupant vehicle is important, and that includes a whole range of strategies from working at home, carpooling, biking, walking. So, yes, and I think it's making those options available is really important. And you also are seeing commuter trip reduction programs where there's carpooling or bus services offered by companies. Those are also important. Just any way that you can get people out of a single occupant vehicle is critical.
And I know that the Strategic Growth Council has these cap and trade auction proceeds to spend. Are there particular investments that you think are really helpful in this respect or just generally to reduce driving miles that listeners should be aware of?
I mean, often a lot of these are very specific to a given location, but we make investments around a lot of active transportation, so biking and walking, helping to create connected sidewalks, bike paths, et cetera, to make it safer and easier for people to use alternative transportation. We also site our investments near high-quality transit to make it easier to use a bus that's going to come frequently enough or, light rail.
So thank you, Richard, for that question. I want to make sure we have time for Wayne from San Mateo, who's calling in. Wayne, are you there on the line?
I am on the line, and I appreciate you taking my call. I will be protesting on Thursday if I can get away from work, but that's difficult. I would like this summit to put out a proposal to ban all fracking in California and, frankly, to ban all oil production in California, no more searching for oil anywhere in California, and to keep tar sands out of our state as well. One of the main references points I have goes back to a lecture at Stanford. Don DiPaolo, a geologist, said that the background geologic rate of carbon emissions is roughly 0.03 gigatons per year. Presently, we're putting out about 10 gigatons of carbon per year. That's about a 330%. 30 times more carbon in the form of carbon dioxide and carbon and methane that we're putting into the atmosphere each year than the relatively low background rate. We are so far beyond a sustainable amount of carbon production with our fossil fuels that we really have to start looking at this not as a let's protect the economy and make sure that the economy can go on. We need to make a crisis definition of what's happening, so that we can begin to get into a mode that will actually ramp up what's needed.
Sure. Well, let me just jump in there and make sure we give our guests here a chance to respond. So, Secretary Rodriguez, what's your answer to Wayne and his question around fracking and looking at this as more of a crisis kind of a framework?
Well, a couple of thoughts come to mind. First, I do want to keep my job with the administration. So I should point out that the governor just signed legislation that will really make it impossible to do offshore oil development in California, and we've taken a position on that. We're also looking very carefully at restricting oil and gas development on federal lands as well. So as I said, we've got a number of of programs that are designed to reduce the development of oil and gas in California. We've got new regulations in place to govern fracking, and those regulations are designed to address the environmental impacts from fracking in the state. And as I said, we see a gradual downturn in oil and gas production in the state. That's what we have to do. In terms of I will say this. We do feel the immediacy. If you look at the fires in the state, if you look at the increases in temperature in the state, if you look at the changes in rain patterns in the state, we understand that we are dealing with a catastrophic situation. And so we do look very, very carefully at how are we going to respond to that? How can we reduce our emissions? How can we bring about changes? And as I said, we're committed to reducing oil and gas use in the state. It's just a question of timing as much as anything else.
All right. Well, thank you, Wayne, for calling in with that question. I just one last question for all three of you, our panelists today, and that is, following the summit this week, what are you sort of looking to see what happens next on climate? I mean, what are the big things and what are the sort of the ideal outcomes that could come out of this discussion? So, Louise, let me turn that to you first and get your thoughts.
Well, I think, I mean, we heard about, you know, the desire to get to encourage increased ambition come December at the Conference of the Parties. I also think it is worth pointing out all of the other events that are happening around the summit. And there's a number, in fact, engaging the science and research community. A number of our scientific societies are coming together to talk about the important role and partnership of science to support climate action. And I think you're going to see that. And so I do think you're energizing a lot of constituencies to come together and work to implement a lot of these solutions.
Great. And Secretary Rodriguez, last word on what's to come after the summit?
The summit is a step on the way to Poland. And so what's got to come out of the summit is momentum and a greater ambition. We need to do more, otherwise we're not going to meet our targets. Fortunately, we're California. We're in a good position to make that argument. It's an argument that we've been able to make at past UN conferences, as the senator mentioned. We've been at a number of them talking about California's commitment to addressing climate change. And so what comes out of the summit is momentum and encouragement for greater ambition because it is an existential crisis.
And Senator De Leon, last word.
What I'm looking for is sustained ambition, because when the Conference of Parties meets in Poland, there has to be a reality check among all the co-signers of the Conference of Parties Paris Agreement in 2015. Where are we at exactly? What are the benchmarks? We now need to start executing. And that's why I think that it's more vital than ever that California remains America's exceptional example, a beacon of hope and opportunity in a very uncertain world, that the rest of the country, as well as the world, is watching very closely what happens in the state of California, because we are the world's largest economy tackling 100% clean energy. If we can accomplish it here in California, it can be done in other subnational states throughout the country as well as the world. So the question is now, it's about execution and it's about political leadership and making sure it gets done.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's City Visions for this evening. My guests were California State Senator Kevin De Leon. Welcome. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
And California Secretary for Environmental Protection, Matthew Rodriguez.
Thank you.
And Louise Bedsworth, Executive Director of the Strategic Growth Council.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows to let us know what you thought about tonight's program and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Jennifer Rewick. Join us next week for the second installment of this three-part series as we talk about the aftermath of the Global Climate Action Summit and what's to come. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Oh, and I should also thank Elliot Whittington for standing by on the line. But I want to thank all of you for tuning in, and I hope you have a good night and a great rest of your week. Thanks so much.